Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001, America's Real Enemies.
Hello. Watching mainstream television news programs these days is a fascinating experience, and an enormously educational experience for those Americans able to read between the lines. CNN headline news still carries the red, white, and blue banner, America's New War, in a transparently obvious effort to build public support for a full-scale war against Israel's enemies, rather than a simple punitive expedition against the group that organized the September 11th attack on New York and Washington. Fox News, which is heavy on interviews with bureaucrats, diplomats, generals, and the like, slants its interviewee choices and the substance of the interviews to build public support in the same direction. There are plenty of knowledgeable Americans who are solidly against dragging America into a war to clean up the Middle East for the benefit of Israel, but they have no voice in the mainstream news media. The people whose opinions are heard by the lemmings want everyone to believe that the failure of the United States to take out Iraq and Iran now in the wake of the September 11th attack will reveal us to the world as spineless wimps just asking for another terrorist attack. They tell us that every patriot should be in favor of a full-scale war against every country in the Middle East that these pro-Israel hawks label as an enemy of freedom and democracy. And there are lots of reports on public opinion polls aimed at convincing the lemmings that the public really wants a full-scale war. To me, the interesting thing about this media effort is its obviousness. It is so blatant that it should be quite clear to anyone able to observe it with detachment. The media bosses want a war. The media deliberately are pushing public opinion toward approval for a major war. Even clearer is the lesson to be drawn from the way the news media avoid the obvious questions. Why were we attacked? Did our government's policies in the Middle East provoke the attack? If so, should we re-examine these policies and perhaps change them, regardless of what we do to punish the attackers? The media people and the experts they've been interviewing shrink from such questions like a vampire shrinks from a crucifix. Any sensible person would ask such questions, but the media and the people they interview don't. Fascinating. The most interesting people to watch giving their opinions in the media are the Gentile neoconservatives, the Jean Kirkpatricks, the George Wills, the Jack Kemps, the William Buckleys, the Rush Limbaughs. These are people, writers, editors, bureaucrats, lecture circuit types, who make a pretense of conservatism and patriotism, and who keep the businessman, Republican, flag-waving side of the public in line. They earn their living by keeping their noses up under the Jews' coattails at all times. They all understand that their magazines would disappear from the newsstands, that their radio sponsors would cease being sponsors, and that there would be no more lecture invitations if they failed to follow the Jewish party line. They are a rabid bunch of attack dogs for the Jews, without any real patriotism or any sense of shame at all. Every one of them is now beating the war drums on behalf of Israel and calling for the annihilation of Israel's enemies. These Gentile attack dogs for the Jews really have no opinions of their own. They simply follow the party line which is laid down by Jews, most of whom are behind the scenes. During the Clinton administration, I remarked more than once that it was the most Jewish government America ever had had. A Jewish Secretary of State, a Jewish Secretary of Defense, a Jewish Secretary of the Treasury, a Jewish Secretary of Agriculture, two Jewish Supreme Court Justices, a Jewish National Security Advisor, a Jewish Ambassador to the United Nations, and hundreds of other Jews appointed by Clinton to powerful government positions. George Bush's government is different. The people out front in the public's eye are Gentiles of a sort. A mulatto Secretary of State, a white Gentile Secretary of Defense, a Negress as a National Security Advisor, a white Gentile Treasury Secretary, and except for Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, no really prominent Jews. That is, there are few Jews out front where they can be seen. But the Jews are there, just as in the Clinton government, but working behind the scenes. There's Richard Perle, who's been gnawing at America's foundations since the Nixon days, as one of Bush's principal advisors on military policy, for example. And there's Paul Wolfowitz, nominally the Deputy Secretary of Defense, but in reality more influential in defense policy than his nominal superior, Donald Rumsfeld. Wolfowitz and Perle both judge every policy by the single criterion, is it good for the Jews? And both are relentless and outspoken advocates of the destruction of Iraq and Iran, although there is no evidence that either of those countries had anything to do with the September 11th attack. For Perle and Wolfowitz, it is sufficient that those countries are enemies of Israel. In a top-level military strategy briefing for Bush on September 13th, Wolfowitz urged, quote, ending states who sponsor terrorism. That's still the position of Perle and Wolfowitz and all of their neoconservative camp followers. How do you end a state? What happens to the people? Hey, the people of Iraq and Iran aren't Jews, so don't worry about it. Why are you, some kind of bleeding heart liberal wimp? Don't ask questions, just do it. And of course, no one among all of these bloodthirsty neocon warmongers even hints at putting Israel on the list of states who sponsor terrorism, and which therefore needs to be ended. Have you ever heard of Mossad? That's not just some rogue group of assassins and terrorists which operates without the sanction of the Israeli government. It's an agency of the Israeli government. It's part of the government of Israel. Mossad sends out its murder squads all over the world to kill people the Israeli government doesn't like. Usually, they don't get caught. Or if they do, the media hush it up. But they've been caught shooting a Palestinian with a silenced pistol in Norway, squirting poison in the ear of a Muslim religious leader in Jordan, putting bombs in the hotel rooms of Arab diplomats in Syria. They've shot down civilian airliners if there was someone aboard they didn't like. They send assassins dressed as Arabs into Palestinian towns to murder Palestinian leaders in their homes in the dead of night. In 1981, Israeli aircraft launched a surprise bombing raid on Baghdad to destroy a research center there. Israel has had several prime ministers who were professional terrorists before they went into politics, including Menachem Begin, Ehud Barak, and Ariel Sharon, the current prime minister. The first leaders of the State of Israel were terrorists who carried out the terror bombing of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in 1946, killing 91 people. Ever hear of letter bombs? They are an Israeli invention. The Mossad has sent hundreds of letter bombs to scientists, journalists, and academics in Egypt, Syria, and other countries to kill and terrorize Israel's opponents. Indeed, there are states in the Middle East which sponsor terrorism, in some cases because they have no other way of fighting back against their oppressors. But Israel has engaged in far more state-sponsored terrorism than any other state in the region. And yet, the experts who speak grimly on American television about ending states who sponsor terrorism pretend as if they have never heard of Israeli terrorism. As I said, all of this is painfully obvious. More obvious than Jewish television propaganda has been for a long time. After the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995, the unanimous refusal of the controlled media and the government to acknowledge that bombing as the outraged response of one patriot to the Clinton government's massacre of innocents in the Branch Davidian Church in Waco 2 years earlier, and instead to attempt to blame militias and political dissidents generally, was a pretty transparent exercise in deceitful propaganda. But the present attempt by the media and the government to deflect blame for September 11th from our country's blind support for Israel is even more obvious. It provides a wonderful education for those observers capable of being educated. The effect on the general public of the pro-war propaganda today is somewhat less salutary, but still interesting. The lemmings are responding as expected, but there is more diversity in the response of the public than the media bosses like. I have a Jewish Telegraphic Agency report on my desk showing the results of public opinion polls taken in the United States a few days ago. The September 28th JTA report is headed, "Polls Following Terror Attacks on U.S. Give Israel High Marks." The first part of the report gives the depressing information we expect. A poll of 1,011 Americans conducted by the Institute for Jewish and Community Research and the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at the Hudson Institute found that 92% of those questioned endorse, quote, "full cooperation between the United States and Israel in combating terrorism." The president of the Institute for Jewish and Community Research, Gary Tobin, was quoted, and I quote, "That's as close to unanimous as you'll ever get in a national poll. It means that the American public is almost completely behind Israel and American support for Israel and American cooperation for Israel," end quote. Well, this report is not quite as nearly unanimous as Mr. Tobin would have us believe, but we'll get to that in a minute. A second poll of 1,032 Americans conducted by CNN, USA Today, and Gallup found 55% of Americans saying they back Israel in its conflict with the Palestinians, while only 7% back the Palestinians. The pro-Israel results are up from about 40% before September 11th, while the pro-Palestinian results remain relatively unchanged. The JTA report quotes Tim Wooliger, president of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the huge and powerful pro-Israel lobby feared by every politician in Washington. "These polls demonstrate the solidarity between Americans and Israelis," Wooliger said. "In the wake of the September 11th terrorist attacks on America, Americans understand that we should support another country which has been relentlessly attacked by terrorists and which shares our values of democracy, sanctity of human life, and tolerance for differences in personal beliefs." Really, that's what the Jews said. Israel, where collective punishment and the torture and killing of prisoners are government policy. Israel, the world capital of the white slave trade, where buying and selling kidnapped Gentile women as sex slaves is legal, is a country that respects the sanctity of human life. What Wooliger forgot to mention is that religious Jews believe that only Jews are human. The JTA report also quotes David Makovsky of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, another pro-Israel group. Makovsky says that the rise in sympathy for the Jewish state is a direct result of Americans experiencing firsthand the threat of terrorism that has plagued Israel. Americans identify with Israel's plight, he said. Could it possibly be that the way the Jewish news media present the news to the American people, always representing the efforts of Palestinians attempting to regain their country as terrorism, and the efforts of the Israelis to repress them as self-defense, has something to do with the way Americans view the situation in the Middle East? Well, of course it does. Nevertheless, a larger portion of the American public than I would have guessed apparently haven't been fooled by the spin put on the news by the controlled media. The Jewish poll I just cited, which showed 92% of the public agreeing that the United States should cooperate with Israel in combating terrorism, found that slightly more than 20% of the respondents blamed the September attack on U.S. support for Israel. The implication is that many of those who understand that U.S. support for Israel was the cause of the attack still are willing to collaborate with Israel. In any case, the 20% figure is encouraging. Also encouraging is the finding that those most likely to blame Israel are young people and people with relatively high incomes. Another finding of the same poll is that 12% of the public believe that we now should distance ourselves from Israel, while 74% believe that we should not, with the pro-Israel respondents concentrated in the Bible Belt, where many primitive Christians actually accept the claim of the Jews to be God's chosen people. Remember, these are the findings of a poll taken by a Jewish organization and reported by the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, where the motive is to absolve Israel of blame and show maximum U.S. support for the Jewish state. A separate poll taken by Time and CNN reports that 21% of the respondents feel less favorable toward Israel after the attack, while only 10% feel more favorable. The 21% figure in this poll is consistent with the finding of the Jewish poll that 20% of the public blame the attack on U.S. support for Israel. Polls can be tricky, with the results very much dependent on the exact wording of the questions. But certainly the polls cited in the JTA report are encouraging, indicating that a significant portion of the public is able to see the obvious. Perhaps lemmings make up only about 80% of the population instead of the 95% I have estimated in the past. The unfortunate fact remains, however, that although approximately one in every five Americans understands that the September 11th attack was the consequence of our government's support for Israel's aggression in the Middle East, one never would guess that from watching television news, where the pretense is rigidly maintained that U.S. support for Israel had nothing to do with the attack, that it was an attack by people who simply hate our freedom and democracy, as George Bush puts it. Not one of the experts being interviewed daily on television will give the slightest hint that anyone except a few haters and extremists believes otherwise. That must be intimidating to the enlightened 20%. No one wants to be labeled a hater or an extremist. And of course, it's intended to be intimidating. It's intended to keep the one in five who understands from explaining the facts to the four in five who don't. It will, of course, be yet another tragedy for Americans if we let ourselves be lied into another war to advance the interests of the Jews at the expense of our own. There is an even greater tragedy looming than another war, however. That is the loss of our most fundamental freedoms. The same people who are using the September 11th attack as a pretext to push America into a full-scale war on behalf of Israel also are using it as a pretext to stifle dissent. They have the lemmings under control, but they are worried about that 20% or so of the population who aren't buying the television propaganda that the attack was unprovoked and that it was an attack on freedom and democracy. They want to use the power of government to shut these people up so that they can't influence others. Intimidation through propaganda is a powerful weapon in the hands of the warmongers. Perhaps you remember how it was during the previous Persian Gulf War 10 years ago. Flag-waving yahoos were ready to beat up anyone who didn't seem an enthusiastic enough supporter of the war effort. Anyone who questioned America's terror bombing of Baghdad was looked at with scorn and considered a subversive. The Lennings all tied yellow ribbons to everything in sight. Parking meters, doorknobs, their car antennas, the fences around their yards, the columns on their front porches, lest anyone suspect that they weren't gung-ho to kill as many Iraqis as possible. The same war fever is being encouraged by the media and the government today. But that's not enough to satisfy the warmongers because some people just aren't intimidated. The warmongers want to lock those people up. So-called conservatives in our government have wanted for years to have the power to silence troublemakers, dissidents, anyone who refused to march in lockstep with everyone else. Our present Attorney General, John Ashcroft, is one of the worst of these. They want new laws to permit them to suppress any speech or opinion or activity they don't like. Believe me, despite their claims of support for freedom and the Bill of Rights, these lying bastards do want to take away our freedom. They are far more dangerous enemies of America's freedom than Osama bin Laden could ever hope to be. They are disguising their fight against our freedom as a fight against terrorism. They already are ramming new laws through state legislatures, and they certainly will be pushing hard for new federal laws as well. They want laws that not only will give the FBI and other secret police agencies additional powers to tap people's telephones and read their email and scrutinize their bank records, but will broaden the definition of terrorism greatly. They want laws that will define as a terrorist anyone who speaks in favor of or helps support a person who has been labeled by the government a terrorist or an organization which has been labeled a terrorist organization. They want laws that will make such a person subject to the death penalty. And who will decide which organizations are terrorist organizations? Hey, you don't have to worry about that. Mr. Wolfowitz and his helpers in the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center will make a list. Attorney General Ashcroft will endorse the list. And if someone is charged under the law with being a terrorist, and you don't think he is, and you give him a donation to help him hire a lawyer to defend himself, you have just given money to a terrorist and will be charged with being a terrorist yourself. Pretty slick, eh? The people who are pushing for these new laws, ostensibly to protect Americans from terrorism, are the same people who for more than a decade have been backing hate crime and speech crime laws. All of the laws, whether ostensibly against hate or against terrorism, have exactly the same purpose, and it's not really about terrorism at all. It is to silence dissenters, to silence people with politically incorrect ideas. The Jews and their Gentile hangers-on are afraid that the 20% of the public that doesn't believe the propaganda coming from television will be able to influence the other 80% if they aren't muzzled. The people in New York and Hollywood and Washington who truly hate America's freedom are hell-bent on using the tragedy of September 11th as an excuse to stamp out that freedom. They are America's real enemies. They are the ones against whom we should wage an all-out war until the last of them has been annihilated. Thanks for being with me again today.